Now playing.
Why so serious?
What is the Matrix?
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What's in the box?
You like scary movies?
What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Movie reviews in 20 Qs.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen Red Roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, hello, good people, and welcome to our podcast On The Room. As you've just heard, we are very lucky to have been joined by the one, the only, the Ginger Princess, Stacey Gavin. How are you, Stacey?
I'm good, thanks, Sam. How are you?
No, I'm awesome. And we also have along a friend that we managed to sit down and watch the movie.
We tricked him into watching this by telling him it was classic movie night.
We lured him in by saying, yeah, it's classic movie night. And he sat down and then we locked the fucking doors and put this movie on. Kahu, how are you, bro?
Yeah, classic my ass. Yes, another time that I'm here to review another shit movie.
Ooh, tell us how you really feel.
Just putting it out there.
Oh, jeez, you're fucking cutting to my heart here, Kahu. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit, actually. Because first of all, we're going to go through the reviews of the movies. So IMDb have this rated at 3.6 out of 10, which is amazing to me because I think it's like a cult classic that every, you know, cult fan would have got on there and given it good reviews. But never mind. Metacritic, 9. Single digits.
I like that Metacritic one because someone who's just skimming through reviews of movies, they'll go, 9. Oh, wow, 9 out of 10.
Must be really good. No, it's legitimately 9 out of 100.
This is probably 9%. Some poor soul who's sat through it thinking it's 9 out of 10.
9%?
Yeah.
Wow.
9% on Metacritic.
See, I find the Rotten Tomatoes one harder to believe because isn't that voted on fans and critics?
No, that's critics.
Oh, just critics.
Okay. Yes. You know, that's just critics' reviews of the movie.
So the IMDb score is actually extremely high at 3.6 out of 10 compared to the 9 and 20.
Oh.
It's like 36%.
You're all a bunch of fascists.
It's less than 1 out of 10, the Metacritic.
Exactly.
But you know what they say? If you go to a restaurant, have a really nice meal, you might tell a couple of friends. If you go to a restaurant, have a terrible service, disgusting meal, find a cockroach on your plate, you'll tell like 20 people, right?
That's
true. I feel like that's what's happening here.
I don't know if that applies to movies though, because anybody can see a movie and it's always the same. Whereas if you go to a restaurant, not everybody's going to be able to go to the restaurant.
You would review it like Metacritic and Rotten. You'll go out and say, this is fucking shit. Whereas people just thought it was like, oh yeah, that's okay. They won't say anything.
I don't know if anyone's watched this and gone, oh yeah, that was okay. I think a lot of people have a very strong opinion about this movie.
Well, I think it's very special.
It's a good objective.
We are both looking at Stacey like she's very special at the moment.
It is a very special movie, and you'll find out why as we go through our questions.
Well, anyway, that's their reviews. What would you give this movie out of 10,000, Stacey Gavin?
It's very difficult for me to separate this movie from the Disaster Artist book and movie,
which we both read, yeah.
Which I've read and seen the movie, because as a result of that I have become very fond of the process of making this movie. It's at least a 5,001.
Oh, just over a half.
In all honesty, I have to settle on 2,000 out of 10,000. I can't objectively rate another movie whilst comparing it to this one in terms of a scoring basis.
Have you seen this?
This has just got to be so low. I mean, even though there's the whole premise of it being so bad it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it's good from an entertainment point of view, watching it once, it's still a bad movie.
Right.
You just can't get around that.
So I haven't gone balls deep on that premise that it's so bad it's good. I've gone hip deep. I've gone full body deep. I've gone totally encapsulated deep. I'm going to give this movie 9,998 out of 10,000. It is 2 points off, a complete perfect score for me, and we'll get into why. There's two tiny errors. If they fixed it, I would absolutely
only two.
Love this movie.
Two?
I love it. Okay.
You heard it here first, people.
Yeah, sure.
That is the highest score we have ever had.
I've given Pulp Fiction a 10,000. Oh, Spanky's given Pulp Fiction a 15,000.
And Hunt for the World of People, I'm pretty sure, got up there.
Yeah, they got up there.
But anyway, now this is in the top three movies that we have reviewed. So the pressure is on, Sam, to prove your score.
According to Sam.
According to me, yeah. So the thing is, for me, it's a complete spectacle. Like, if you know the back history, if you know the little ins and outs, the little nuances, the little craziness about it, it's such a complete experience. You get more from it than, like, I've watched Schindler's List and I've been like, wow, that's a great movie. I'd never want to watch it again. This movie, fuck, if we put it on right now, I'll quit this podcast right now and sit down and watch this movie because it's fascinating. Fascinating. Tommy Wiseau, you are an accidental genius. So if you haven't listened to this podcast before, what we do is review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. We now have a typical format where we ask 10 standard questions of each other. So the first of which is a compliment sandwich. So I want you guys to name one thing good, one thing bad, and then one thing good about this movie. And Kahu, this looks like it's going to be a struggle for you, so you can go first.
I've found a couple of things. So my first good thing about this movie has got to be Johnny's laugh. Even at inappropriate times, it is gold.
What a story, Mark.
It's just so distinctive. Bad is, how is Steven a major character with dialogue 3/4 of the way through the movie when he's hasn't even been on screen prior to that point?
Trivia alert, the actor that was playing his psychologist friend dropped out to go actually do some proper acting, and then they just roped in some guy.
Yeah. And my last good part about this movie is any scene that doesn't actually take place in the bold and the beautiful themed The Room, even if it is on a poorly rendered green screen.
What about
good call.
What about throwing a football around in tuxedos outside?
Well, true. That's I don't think I've ever seen that in a movie before.
Yeah. It's surprisingly, gangs of street youths are getting together in tuxedos and playing football with each other outside of stores.
It's got the makings of a league to challenge the NFL.
So one thing I like about this movie, it's the best fucking movie ever. The second thing...
Is that a thing?
I think you need to explain that.
No.
Not too long.
Let me go. The second thing I didn't like was that there was a couple of continuity errors. Noticeably, one of them is the scene where he records her having a conversation and then he plays back the conversation and it's completely different. It's like, dude, we just heard it.
It's like he doesn't understand who the audience is. You know how sometimes they let the audience in on things that the characters don't know about? It's like he's letting the audience in on things the audience already know about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other continuity error is when he's having a chat with Peter, a psychologist friend, while he's sitting around wearing tuxedo. Where he's going on about how he knows she's cheating on him, but he still loves her. And he has this scene set up where he's sitting on a seat and the guy's beside him. And then when it cuts into a close-up on his face and he's completely swiveled around in the seat. But then when it cuts back, he's facing the right way. And then it cuts back, he's swiveled around. So that was the only thing. So, and then the other thing that I like about this movie is it's the best fucking movie ever.
Oh, what?
I think you cheated.
Yeah. The first good thing is that this movie got made, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Oh, that's quite cute.
The thing I didn't like about it, it's very hard to narrow it down. So I've got, I'm just going to jam three things in. This is a really big sandwich. The name of the movie, The Room, has nothing to do with the movie. And then it was a toss-up
between... It's not true, you're lying.
Then it's a toss-up between... the plot that makes no sense, and then...
I definitely have breast cancer.
Yeah, and then the acting. But see, I didn't want to put this on the actors because I couldn't decide whether it was just the lines they were given and the, as you say, the bold and the beautiful set really didn't do anything for anyone. So I was wondering whether the lines plus the set equaled acting that was hard to believe.
One thing you've got to admit is the actress playing Claudette and the actor playing Chris R fucking knocked it out of the park.
Oh, absolutely. And like, Michelle.
Yeah. Those three actually delivered an Oscar-worthy performance in a film that's never going to be Oscar-worthy. Yeah.
No, I agree. So anyway, it was a toss-up. But anyway, we'll get to those points later. And the third thing, the good thing about it, is that it spawned the book and the movie the Disaster Artist.
That's true. I actually tweeted Greg Sestero recently when I was had a few beers and decided it would be really good to tweet at someone, and I congratulated him. I said, thank you for living through this so we got to enjoy it.
Yeah, should we share this for the people who don't know? So Greg Sestero played Mark in the original movie The Room.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah. And then he wrote a book about that experience and about his friendship with Tommy Wiseau, the movie producer, director, main actor, blah, blah, blah. And then subsequently, James Franco picked up the rights to make the movie of that book. So
the book is phenomenal in that one chapter is about making The Room. The next chapter is about meeting Tommy. And basically alternates throughout the book, and it's like, it's absolutely riveting.
A book about two things, as I said, the relationship and the friendship of meeting such an interesting character as Tommy Wiseau, and then being involved in one of his pet projects.
Even if you've got a passing interest in how movies get made or how hard it is to break through in Hollywood, like, you will, doesn't matter, you will love this book. Like, it's so well written and it's so engaging. This is like the only time I've actually laughed out loud at a book in my entire life.
Or even if you're like me and have no interest in how movies are made exactly. or anything that happens in Hollywood.
Don't care at all, yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about The Room. So question two, Sam.
Yeah, so which two characters would you want with you on a crazy night out?
Girls' night out on the town, Lisa and Michelle. Because they love to drink. They're drinking wine in the afternoon. They are my kind of girls.
I don't know if Lisa's allowed to leave the house. So.
Yeah. Hey, she went shopping with Claudette, so I'm sure she could go night clubbing with me and Michelle.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. What about you, Ko?
Most of the characters are just so unlikable, so it's a bit of a hard decision. I mean, Mark's likely to take the girl you're with, even if you're best mates.
I need to change my answer.
Yeah, yeah. Michelle and Mike will destroy your couch if they come back to your place. So I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe Chris R and Stephen, although Chris R's a complete loose unit and is probably in the penitentiary, so who knows?
Not Chris R and Denny?
Well,
if you take Denny out, Kahu, you can make fun of him for the whole
evening. That's
true,
but
it's the first time he's been out
drinking.
I
don't want to be seen in public with Denny.
I'm kind of undecided as to whether Denny's actually of age or not. It's
and of
it's not
well,
very clear.
That's not the question.
If he's not a moron or not.
Yeah. It's like he's had like a hemispherectomy when they take away half your brain.
Yeah. I'd say somebody's caved him in with a brick.
Yeah.
You're raising that as an issue for Denny before you've raised it as an issue for other characters in this movie.
True, yeah, true.
It's true.
Yeah, that kind of implies that it's not Denny's fault the way his character acts.
Yeah.
So I'd absolutely would take Michelle on a night out. She looks like a good time girl. As long as she's not with her boyfriend who she wants to bang on a couch in someone else's apartment.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure me and her are going to have a fun time. And the best way to have a fun time on a crazy night out is with a drug dealer. So I'm going to take Chris R.
Chris R.
Chris R for the win.
And he's packing, so you got protection.
Exactly. Anyway, and that moves on to question number three. What flavour ice cream is this movie?
My original answer to this question was going to be beige. And then I'm like, hang on a second. That's
beige
not,
isn't a fucking
that
ice
is not
cream.
An ice cream flavour. That's colour. It's like, what's an ice cream that's beige coloured? I'm like, oh, rum and raisin. Then I thought, actually, the addition of alcohol and a few little bits of dried fruit, like to make it a bit fruity, kind of describes this movie quite well. Scene where Lisa and Johnny are having a discussion one evening, and Lisa's like, let's have some fun, let's have a drink, and he's like, you know I don't drink. And then she pours him
a scotch
and vodka, pretty much alcohol soaks the whole
movie.
He takes
half a sip and he's like, oh, I feel you wasted.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, fruit, dried fruit. This movie is fruity as can be, so you know,
cool.
There you go.
Yes. What about you, Ko?
He's not very committed to the whole alcohol-free thing, is he?
I don't drink. Okay, I'm fucked.
Does, you know that multicolored one? It's like green and yellow and red and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called. It's got, it must have some kind of flavor name.
Tutti Frutti.
Yes, that's the one. But when it starts to melt, or when you start mixing it up, it goes like that kind of horrible, sickly, greeny, yuck colour, which is kind of what this movie is. It's just a shambles.
Oh, come on. Aww.
I'm just going to have a dig at this movie every chance I get.
I know. This is probably the first podcast we've had where one of us absolutely loved it, one of us hated it, one of us is sitting right in the middle. I love this. This is going to be great. Okay, so what flavour ice cream is this movie? I'm going with grapefruit. I'm going with blue cheese I'm going with Marmite and tuna. It is a tuna Marmite blue cheese grapefruit ice cream. No idea what the fuck is going on. Anywho, that takes us on to question number four. How long would you guys survive in this movie's world?
San Francisco, yes. The whole way.
I don't think I'd survive very long at all.
I think you might have the same answer as me.
People get cancer and shaken down by gang thugs, and there's just no ramifications or discussion of it at any point afterwards. So I could see Tommy saying, "Oh, hi, Mark. Have you seen Kahu?" And Mark replies, "No, maybe ask Lisa." And then Tommy starts talking about his future wife, and I'm forgotten about.
Yeah, I'm with you, Kahu. I don't think I'd last very long. I sort of anticipate I might have the same fate as Tommy. Spoiler alert, he kills himself at the end.
I think we should have done that at the start of the podcast.
If I'm stuck in this nonsensical world, yeah, I don't think I'd survive nearly as long as Tommy's character. Anywho, moves on to question number five. Okay, we're all going to have the same answer for this, aren't we? What character clearly needs to get laid?
Well, Denny.
Denny.
No, I didn't think of Denny. Again, I was a bit weirded out of that whole situation, whether he's still a minor or not. I've actually gone with Lisa. I mean, that's just about all she does in this movie. And as we know, women change their minds all the time.
That's true. That's true. Congratulations, Kahu. I expected Denny on the count of three there, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so next question, guys. What deep philosophical debate arose in you during this movie?
What makes a movie so bad that it can be good?
Yeah, I know. There's no criteria.
Once you know about the making of the movie and the people involved behind the scenes,
that every time they had a decision, they took the wrong one. Yeah,
it's hard to not like the movie.
It's like rooting for the underdog, eh? Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
You absolutely root for the underdog.
Yeah, it's like, if you know the story behind it, Tommy Wiseau as a person is just so phenomenal and actually in many ways inspirational. He is so deluded, yet completely chases his own dream every single day of his life, regardless of what everyone thinks, regardless of what Hollywood thinks, of what fans think, of what his parents, God knows who they are, of what his friends think, of just his one friend. I don't, yes, I guess so. It's just somebody who just pursues their dreams regardless of everything else in the world. And I don't know many people who like that, who just do that.
Exactly. To touch on that, I can't think of a single person that has chased their dreams so hard and reached such an epic level of fame despite having such an epic level of non-understanding how shit it is. You know what I mean? For instance, Elon Musk has chased after his dream, but deservedly so. Bill Gates chased after his dream, deservedly so. Tommy Wiseau chased after his dreams.
And doesn't know what he's doing.
He's got no idea what he's doing.
So the deep philosophical debate that arose for me while watching this movie is, how flaky are the relationships? Like, how flaky is Lisa and Johnny? They're about to get married. And how flaky is Lisa? She's just like changing her mind, doesn't know. How flaky is Mark?
Women change their minds all the time. Yeah.
He clearly doesn't want to sleep with her. He doesn't want to be friends with Johnny. So it's like, best friends who don't really want to be best friends, two future wife and future husband who don't really want to get married. There's just so much flakiness going on. It's hard to believe that any character in this movie has any right being there.
Yeah. Sometimes people are people.
Yeah, I mean, at least in Lisa's defense, when she wants something, she goes after it. But Mark's just like, oh, if I have to, let's go.
Yeah,
on the stairs.
He's not even into it, eh?
He's the most resignant sex having guy in the entire world.
He doesn't want to.
I can't imagine a guy ever saying no to sex, but he
probably could. He's
the closest.
He says no with his eyes and his body language in this movie.
Yeah. He so doesn't want to have sex with her that he actually bangs her on the staircase rather than in the bed.
But do you know who wants to have sex with her? Denny.
Yes.
Oh, God. Denny's such a creep.
See, this is the thing.
After I watched this movie, I had nightmares of fucking waking up and seeing Denny in my room. Like, I just want to watch you guys.
But hang on a second.
I don't want to watch this. Why the hell would you want to?
So Denny actually reveals his feelings for Lisa to Johnny and says, I love Lisa. I'm in love with Lisa. And Johnny's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's fine. If more people loved each other, the world would be a better place.
If Denny had said that to me, he'd be thrown off the fucking top of that roof.
Yeah. And same with Mark. So if Mark had have said to Lisa, and Lisa said to Johnny, I don't love you anymore, or I love Mark, or what, you know, whatever, Johnny's like, kills himself. It's like one extreme to the other. One thing he's okay with, one thing he kills himself. It's like,
and he knows about it. And everything.
Do we actually get an indication during the movie exactly how old Denny is?
No. What I love about him is he's supposed to be about 17 or 18. Yeah, the actor playing him was 26 at the time, and Mark and Lisa were younger than him.
Right.
The actress playing Lisa was 23, and then in the movie, Johnny said, I gave her 7 years of my life. So he met her, she was 17. Okay, so I'll keep it short and sweet, just like me. What deep philosophical debate arose in me during this movie? I looked at that and thought, this is a really shit movie. And I thought to myself, how shit would my movie be if I tried to make it? Like, at least this guy has actually paid $6 million and got an proper actors and actresses and that sort of shit. Part of me watches Hollywood movies and goes, oh, I could do better than that. Oh, I could write this better. Oh, I could do all that better. And then when I see that movie, I'm like, no, you couldn't.
You're telling me you couldn't make a better movie than The Room? No. Because I find that hard to believe.
You really want to see my movie?
I would love to see your movie. I would love to see you make a movie.
I mean, even if the camera work.
Well, spoiler, bitches, here it comes.
Even if the camera work in a movie that we made ourselves was real shit, I'm pretty sure we could get a more coherent plot line
by editing a tiny bit better.
So, question number 7. Which subplot from the movie would make for its own awesome spin-off movie?
Well, I would like to take Claudette.
Oh, God damn it.
One of the best actresses in the movie, and look at her life. So she's retired. She's all we know about her. She's got a friend. She wants Johnny to provide money to invest in his next home.
She's got breast cancer. She's got a brother who's trying to take his house. Yeah. She's living the life of the fucking...
Yeah, there's a lot going on
ultimate
there.
Ultimate drama.
But, you know, she's a lovely person. She would be a likable lead, a likable main character. And it would be great to get to know the people around her and to see her perspective on Johnny and Lisa.
Right. What about you, Kahu?
So I'd like to see Denny, Mark and Tommy in their own hero movie where they go after the underground drug trade of San Francisco. Of course, the big baddie would be Chris R. But their weapon of choice would be footballs.
What, they just throw footballs at the groins of the drug dealers?
Well, yeah, generally at the groins, a good place to aim for.
Anyway, my one would be Mark. I've got no idea what he does for a job. I've got no, you know what I mean? Like, Lisa rings him up, is just like, hey, can you come around? No, I don't want to talk to you. I'm really busy. Oh, but I really want you to come over. Oh, okay, I'll be over in about 10 minutes. You mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, what does he do for a job? And interestingly, while I was researching this, I looked at how in 2010, The Room got made into a game. And it turns out he's like a FBI, or he's like a undercover police officer or something like that.
Yeah, and it seems like he's got a few demons there.
Yeah. I immediately read that and was like, holy shit, this dude's fucking up to something. He'd make for a good movie.
I agree with you. If his character developed from what he was in The Room.
Of course he's going to. It's his own movie.
Yeah, because in The Room he was just so one-dimensional. It was like eyes glazed over. Like, you know, he wasn't...
I don't love you. I love you.
Yeah, he
I don't
was,
love you.
He wasn't his
I
own
love
person.
You. I love you.
He had a shave, though. That brought out a
That was
dimension.
A forced shave, by the way. He was growing the beard and he was filming. And in his kind of... In the back of his mind, he thought, well, actually... He knew this movie was shit, and he knew that maybe the beard would protect him from being recognized. So
no
he,
shit.
So he
that
was going to shave it after the movie. So,
right.
But partway through the movie, Tommy forced him to shave his beard because he wanted a fresh new take on Mark. And in the next scene, he wanted Mark to come in and everyone to go. I think it's the tuxedo scene. Before they play football, he comes in and that's his first scene where he's freshly shaven. And everyone's like, "Ooh, Mark." So that wasn't his choice.
I thought he had just had too much happy time with Lisa.
So question number 8, what scene in this movie really needed someone getting hit in the balls?
There's just so much random American football so many opportunities for people in tuxedos to be hitting the balls right there, and they just didn't take it. Yeah. Another reason why I gave this movie 2 out of 10.
But they did injure, what's his name, Peter, in that scene. He fell over and face planted. So I was like, hitting the balls and face planted in that same scene, that's a bit rough.
What I loved about that is he goes, right, I'm out. And I'd love to think that they actually captured the actor, the guy's reaction to that film. He was like, yeah, I've had enough of this fucking film. I'm out of here. Because he doesn't appear again.
And they just used it as a character line.
Yeah. Him throwing attention. No, I'm out of here.
But the thing was, he just kind of clearly fell over. And when they showed him on the ground, you could see that he'd fallen over with his hands, like, on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, have him falling over onto mat, move the mat, and then edit it and get him up again.
Ridiculous. So my one was the fight scene between Johnny and Mark. That literally went nowhere. It was just a whole bunch of shoulder jostling.
Oh, at the party.
Yeah, at the party. I would rather have fucking ball shot then.
True.
Who on who?
I don't care. Ball on ball.
Like them both balling together.
Balling together, bro. Ball brothers.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, that gives me that bad image of those dudes sword fighting at Guns N' Roses.
What? Hey, you need to tell me this story. I wasn't at Guns N' Roses.
No,
that's an off-the-air one.
Never crossed the streams.
Oh my god. Okay, so I think that the scene where someone really needed to get hit in the balls was on the roof, Johnny and Mark. Johnny is reclining with his hands behind his head in a
What a story, seat. Mark.
Yeah, and Mark is telling him a story about some chick that got beat up so bad she ended up in a hospital on Guerrero Street. And Johnny laughs. He goes, oh.
What a story, Mark.
He should have got hit in the balls right then because he was wide open to it. He was leaning back. He had his one leg up on his, you know, one thing. He had his legs wide open. Would have been a perfect shot for someone potentially coming up through the stairs, or even Mark himself going, what the fuck percentage. Are you laughing at that?
Yeah, because even if it deflected, it's still, you know, going to hit him flush on.
Exactly.
Okay, so that moves on to question number 9. What would the Tinder username, or like an online dating profile username, be for one of these characters?
So many options for Lisa.
Yes.
But I've gone with bring your best friend Lisa.
I also went with Lisa, but I went with FYI, I don't love Johnny anymore. What about you, Stace?
Denny, I like to watch.
That's a good one.
It's kind of a scary one. So you're on Tinder, sort of, right? You're looking for someone to go out with, and he's like, Denny, I like to watch other people. So
couples.
It's like you still need to find someone to go on a Tinder date with, and also Denny. To watch.
Yeah, it kind of makes Denny a bit superfluous, doesn't it?
What do you mean makes Denny superfluous? He already is superfluous.
It's his mission in life to be superfluous.
Poor Denny. Okay, so next question. Final question of the all play questions. What would the porn parody name be for this movie?
The Room. Because The Room has nothing to do with the actual movie.
That's a good answer, but I'm going to beat the shit out of that.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, Kate? Let me go first then.
Yeah.
So this will work well as a sequel too. So I've got The Room, The Reentry.
Holy shit. I'm not going to follow that. Kahu, congratulations.
You won. Blitzed it. There. You've smashed even Sam on that.
Okay, you guys, you ready? I went with Stairway to Heaven. Cool, so that moves us on to the personal round. Kahu, your set of 3 questions.
So for my first question, and we've kind of already touched on it so far, but what actually is the point of Denny in this movie?
I think he's there to make Tommy look sympathetic. That's the intention. I'm not saying it plays out well, but I'm saying that's the intention.
Denny is in this movie to make Johnny seem creepier, to make Lisa more justified in her actions. Because imagine this movie without Denny in it.
Oh,
Johnny doesn't seem so creepy, apart from his general appearance in himself.
And apart from everything about him.
He doesn't have a weird relationship in his life where you're like, what the hell is going on there?
I kind of disagree. I think, if anything, it's meant to soften the character of Johnny because it makes him appear as if he's this kind of caring father figure.
Which I think kind of
puts even more hate on the character of Lisa, because he's such a good guy. And
well,
Lisa's,
you know what, I'd have to agree with you, but I also agree with my own answer, which adds to the complexity that the room puts out there that I don't think people appreciate.
Maybe it should have been called The Onion.
Yes, now you're onto it, guys.
For my second question, does Tommy make Lisa stay in the house?
Yes.
And does this make Tommy a worse character?
Yeah, I think he's very protective over his Lisa, and he's made her into a shut-in.
Yes, he does make Lisa stay in the house, and yes, it does make him a worse character.
I wonder if there's a bit of the syndrome going on there where he becomes so, he's so nice to Lisa that Lisa kind of falls into his trap of wanting to stay in the house.
Well, true. I was actually contemplating that when thinking out my answer for this question. I was thinking she seems kind of lazy. Like, you know, the conversation between Lisa and Claudette, where Claudette's like, look, he's financially providing for you and da da da, you can find anyone better than this. And Lisa's like, this is, oh, yeah.
The most analysis anyone's ever done. Good.
And good, she rebels by getting Mark to come into the house, even when it'd be much safer for her to go to his place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or at least to his car.
Yes.
Like in court having sex. Yeah.
For my last question, mystery surrounds the origins of Tommy Wiseau. The national animal of which country best represents Tommy and why?
If there is a country in the world that has a bat as its national symbol, then that
Transylvania
country, yeah, should be the national representative of Tommy.
Wiseau is supposedly, like, Wiseau is not a French word. So he's gone with Ouzeau, which is French for birdman. And the French national animal is a giant cock. So that's what I'm going for. Yeah. He's a giant cock.
He's the giant cock.
He is the giant cock.
But who flies at night? Hence, bat.
Batcock. It's a superhero franchise.
Oh,
that's
that
a porn
is,
parody.
That is.
Question number 14. Now, do you even understand life? Do you?
No.
Yeah, that's obvious. What about you, Kai?
Yeah, no. Best not to try. Just stuff just happens, then you move along to the next thing.
Yes.
So in the book The Disaster Artist, which we've touched upon, Greg has a tough time working out whether Tommy's a pirate, an alien, a vampire, or some sort of roadie from a 80s band. What do you guys reckon he is?
My original answer was all of the above.
Yes.
Because he fits the profile. However, I've decided to eliminate the 80s band roadie, because he doesn't really like to do hard work. So he's either a pirate, alien, or a vampire.
So he's a pirate, alien, vampire, you reckon?
Yes.
Okay.
And that'll be a great Marvel movie to cross over with Doctor Strange and Black Panther.
Okay, what about you, Kay?
I actually think that Tommy is actually Tommy Lee from Motley Crue. Think about it.
He's putting a European accent on.
Similar age, both born in Europe.
Tommy Wiseau.
And I don't know if you guys have seen the Tommy Lee porno, but he also has sex with a girl's navel, just like Tommy Wiseau does in this movie. I'm talking shit. I've seen that.
Sam, we do not need to know about your porn.
I just have to touch on the fact that at one point during this movie, Tommy Wiseau is pounding up in Tom Lisa's fucking belly. Anyway.
I wouldn't know because I fast forwarded through those horrific.
I fast forwarded for you guys. I was, yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah, that kind of made it worse.
Yeah.
What, the fast forwarding?
Yeah.
The rapid thrusting.
The rapid thrusting.
And then not being able to work out where to stop it. Anyway, so that moves me on to the final question. Did Tommy actually hit Lisa?
He did not hit her. He did not.
It's not true. I did not.
I don't think so. I mean, Lisa by this point has zero credibility, so I'm inclined to side with Tommy on this one.
That is true. She lies about her pregnancy. She's got nothing.
What? I missed that. Oh, that was at the conversation at the party, but I didn't believe it for a second, therefore I forgot it.
That was Steve's big intro.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Steve!
But anyway, I totally agree with you. Lisa has no credibility, so pretty much at this point, Johnny could do anything to her, and we wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
True, true.
So anyway, that moves us on to Stacey's questions. What do you got, Stace?
Do you think the movie was worth what they paid to make it?
No, not at all.
Now, hang on. We need to clarify, how much do you think they paid to make this movie?
I know what they paid.
I think it was
$6
million.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know it was $6
million. I know. To put it in perspective, Lost in Translation got made in the same year, and that cost $4.5 million. Monster, the movie in which Charlize Theron won an Oscar for Best Actress came out the year after, I believe, and that cost $5 million.
Mm.
So, no, not at all.
Yeah, you just got to think, what did they actually spend $6 million on? I mean, there's no major actors involved. So no massive cast costs. Tommy seemed like he did everything anyway. So, I mean, apart from all the green screens, I mean, where'd all the money go? It's not as if they promoted it heavily.
No.
Although he did have that big billboard that was up for about 4 years or something, eh?
So. Yeah, he was paying $5,000 a month for
a
billboard, yeah. In which he looked like he was a meth addict.
Yeah.
Maybe. Meth bender. Do you think it could be because Tommy purchased the two cameras they used to record the movie, which is not usual practice, apparently. Mm. Apparently, major studio companies just
rent
the equipment for the duration of filming of 5 weeks, and then they give it back. Whereas in this case, he purchased the equipment, and in addition to that, he purchased both an HD and a film camera because he just couldn't decide which one he wanted to go with, so he taped them together.
He wanted to be the first in the world to record on two different cameras at the same time.
Yeah, So, which did not result in a better quality output, as we know.
It was like a record of, I'm the person that ate the most cow pats in the space of an hour. That's my record, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Why was Johnny so blasé when Denny revealed that he was in love with Lisa?
I think it's because he didn't find Denny a threat, and why would you?
Yeah.
So what's the difference between Denny and Mark?
Well, Mark's like maybe not a moron.
Yeah, and
he kind of is in this movie, I have to say.
Not as much as a moron as Denny.
Yeah, because Johnny is Mark's best friend. Johnny doesn't think that would happen.
Yeah, flies under the radar. Yeah.
Until like quite close to the end. Yeah, I kind of think Johnny sees Denny as a bit of a kid and mistakes it to be a motherly love for Lisa.
Hmm.
So as referenced in our opening line reading.
Oh, I was just talking with you. What are you talking about?
How did the florist not recognize her favorite customer, Johnny?
Maybe he's just not that distinctive looking. I don't know.
Oh, come on, Co. Name me one other person in the history of humanity that looks anything like Johnny, including
the all-American Johnny with like dark black hair, long black hair.
It's got that southern drawl.
And the lazy
eye. Maybe she's just really short-sighted.
See, I've got it worked out. Right. Earlier that morning, robbers broke into that florist. They took them hostage, right? And then the police showed up, and there was a bit of a standoff. And during that standoff, one of the guys that was robbing the store bashed her over the back of the head with a shotgun and knocked her unconscious. And she's now suffering from post-concussion syndrome. So when Johnny comes in, she's like, oh, how you doing, man? What's going on? I didn't even recognize you. Because she has no idea where she is or anything. She should actually be at the hospital. She has a brain bleed.
Oh, jeez. I thought where you were going with that was that the robbers came and stole her eyes.
That also works, yes.
To be honest, though, who robs a florist? Like,
hey, florist. The wet
bandits, maybe?
Florist,
if I was walking past a florist and I was a bit short on change, I wouldn't go, shit, yeah, I'm going to go to town on that store.
I don't want to go all Pulp Fiction on you, but why not a florist shop? You know, think about it. They've got lots of money. They've got no security guards. You know, people come in and pay for their wedding shit.
Florists for some reason, charge a lot of money for just dead, cut-off foliage.
Yeah. That's true. I'm probably still more inclined to rob the bookstore across the road, but whatever.
You're assuming this is a universe where you've got options, Carl.
Look, they're charging $18 for a dozen red roses, man. Yeah. They're cashed up. Yeah. They are cashed up.
This is Johnny's world. Everybody else is just living in it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so that moves us on to the last question. So we had a lot of really good questions here, and I'd love to go through all of them, but we had to pick out our favourite. And congratulations to this week's friend of the show, Jeremy Howson. You gave us the best question, bro. Proud of you, man. It's awesome.
Sure.
There's a lot of theories, ideas about how Tommy made his money to pay for this film. A lot of ideas, a lot of notions. If you read The Disaster Artist, Greg touches on a few of the ideas in interviews with Tommy. He comes up with his own ideas, everything like that. But let's hear it from us. How do we think that Tommy came up with the money to pay for this film?
As I said before, he's actually Tommy Lee, so he's got all that rock money from the 80s and 90s.
And the movie, there's the no money other, he made from the porn film with Planet of the Apes.
That's right. There's no other explanation.
What about you, Stace? What's your idea?
Well, I believe that wherever Tommy Wiseau's home country is, he was a spy paid to go on a mission to the United States and do whatever. Therefore, he made his money through a payout from his home country.
So like the KGB or something?
Yeah, to do this spy gig. And as a consequence, he could never reveal where his home country was.
The plot thickens.
Now, let me take you on a journey.
Hey, I already did take you on a journey.
So in the Back to the Future movies, Biff Tannen gets a sports
he is not Biff.
Almanac, and he comes back from the future, back in time, and he has the sports results for everything. So he's able to bet on every major sporting event and make tons of money. But that has nothing to do with my answer. Tommy Wiseau seduced an older woman. Tommy Wiseau did an Anna Nicole Smith. He seduced an older woman that had a ton of money, had nothing to do with it, and ended up taking all her cash and fucking cleaning her out.
That's actually plausible, because when he first came to the States, didn't he go to Florida?
Yes.
Which is the retirement central of the USA.
But yeah, exactly. No, he was in Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana.
But the other thing too is I've forgotten the guy's name, but there's a guy credited as like the casting agent and executive producer on this film, and he'd died 4 years before this film got made. Okay, so that moves us down to the end of our podcast. Bonus round. We need you to do your best line from this movie.
Thank you, honey. This is a beautiful party. You invited all my friends. Good thinking. As though, who the fuck else is he going to invite to his party?
2 out of 10.
Some what strangers?
Do you got, there's only one candidate for this one. You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
That's classic.
All I have to say is, what a story, Kahu. Okay, so I'm going to have to go with scene. Apartment rooftop, door opens. I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Rather than doing a quiz round, we're going to do a fun fact, a trivia round. Me and you have both read The Disaster Artist. A lot of great trivia about how this movie got made. We've talked about it during the podcast. What would be your favourite piece of trivia from this movie?
I like the fact that when Tommy insisted on having his butt film during the sex scenes, his reasoning was, I have to show my ass or this film won't sell.
That was high on my list of trivia as well. Okay, that was an awesome one. My favourite by far is the fact that Mark's name comes from the fact that Greg Sestero recommended to Tommy to go watch the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley, and he came out of it and said to Greg that was a really good movie, and then he went off and wrote a movie with a main character named Mark because of the actor Mark Damon who was in The Talented Mr. Ripley. So anyway, guys, thanks for bearing with us as we go through one of my most favourite films, one of Stacey's middle of the road, but increasingly growing on her films, and one of Kahu's hatedest films.
Yes.
It was entertaining, and I possibly could watch it again, but it's just bad.
You need to watch it as
Kahu, I think you could watch it again. It's not that bad.
Just put it on right now. Let's do this. I'm keen as.
Just because a movie deserves a second viewing doesn't mean it's a good movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But anywho, that takes us down to the end of our podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Anyway, thanks again to my lovely co-hosts that have come and joined me on this adventure through the room. Thank you, Kahu. Thank you, Stacey. I hope you guys had fun.
I had fun.
Thanks, guys. This was great. See you later.
Catch you later, everybody.
You can come out now, Johnny. She's gone.
In a few minutes, bitch.
Testies, 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so next question. Watch two characters from this film.
Whoa. I haven't said mine. Bathcock. The Bathcock movie.
He's Matlock's alter ego.
I don't have anything else to say, because Teeps is here and he's too cute. I've lost my train of thought. It would add a certain element, don't you think?
A certain element? I think it'd add the entire periodic fucking table to the fucking movie. Stacey's drunk, everybody.
Still read this movie. It's still read this movie. Read the that book. It is still fascinating.